welcome to Author Talk. Today we go a bit afield of our normal conversations as I interview Graham Hancock. Instead of a book written about modern religion or faith, this is a story of our beginnings, our extinctions, and our beginnings again of humanity. We all know that the dinosaurs were wiped out millions of years ago. It was supposedly caused by an asteroid or a meteor that slashed down into the Earth, causing mass extinctions of some 3/4 of the plant and animal species on Earth, some 66 million years ago. Millions of years ago? Oh, for heaven's sakes, nothing to worry about, right? Let's keep going. No, I think we better take a pause. Somewhere between 11,600 years ago to 12,800 years ago, an extinction-level event occurred. It has been discovered that during the first event, 12,800 years ago, a giant comet entered our solar system from deep in space and broke into multiple fragments. At least 8 of these fragments hit the North American ice cap, while others hit the European ice cap. The impacts from these comet fragments were a mile wide. When they hit the ice, they immediately melted millions of square miles of ice, and the entire Earth changed forever. The temperature dropped like a rock all over the world. Why? How? To find out what happened, let's turn to one of the most well-known investigators of these catastrophic events in the world, Mr. Graham Hancock, the author of The Sign and the Seal, Fingerprints of the Gods, and now the new book, Magicians of the Gods, The Forgotten Wisdom of Earth's Lost Civilization. Please help me welcome worldwide bestseller with over 7 million copies of his book sold to date, Graham Hancock, welcome to Author Talk.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Graham, we're going to talk about the extinction event, but what was North America and Europe like before this extinction event 11,000 to 12,800 years ago? What was it before those massive extinctions?
It's very difficult for us today to even imagine what it was like. But essentially, what you have is the northern half of North America covered with ice that is 2 miles deep, and the northern half of northern Europe covered with ice 2 miles deep. So the world looked very different. Where did all that water come from that created those great ice caps? Well, it came out of the oceans, so sea level was 400 feet lower than it is today. So in summary, areas of the world that are heavily populated and economically productive today were under 2 miles of ice, and other areas of the world which may have been productive at that time are now submerged by the rising sea levels caused by the melting of that ice.
What about population? What about civilization?
Well, the orthodox view, the view promulgated by mainstream archaeologists, taught in our schools and universities, picked up by the mass media, is that our ancestors at that time were entirely hunter-gatherers, primitive peoples without any urban development, without any agriculture, and without any monumental architecture at all. These were nomadic hunter-gatherers who lived in dwellings of skins and sticks. This is the orthodox view. My position for many years, and I've been working away at this subject for more than a quarter of a century, is that we are a species with amnesia, that in the ancient Ice Age world, there did exist what we would recognize as an advanced civilization, but it coexisted with hunter-gatherer peoples, just as our own advanced civilization today coexists with hunter-gatherers in the Namibian desert, in the Amazon rainforest, and so on and so forth. So I'm suggesting that the world's population was much more nuanced than we are taught by archaeologists.
That's fascinating. We're going to get into that in a second. But what I'm really trying to understand, Graham, and wrap my hands around it, or my arms around it, is this extinction event. And then I'm going to go back, because we often talk about religion here and spirituality. So I'm going to get back into that, because we're going to be talking about Noah's flood here, folks. First of all, I got to understand how this works. Now, Graham sent me a graph, which I will post on the website. If you aren't looking at that, if you're on iTunes or something, take a look at the website, www.authortalk.com. Audio and look for Graham in the listing for authors, because he gave me a graph that shows exactly what the temperatures were from ice cores in, I believe, Greenland, wasn't it, Graham?
Yeah, from the Greenland ice cores.
Right.
I mean, the bottom line, without getting into, you know, detailed figures which are available on the graph, is that we have a sudden plunge in global temperatures. The peak of the ice age was reached about 21,000 years ago. And after that, there was a period of warming. Quite dramatic warming took place for a short while, and then more warming. And generally, over a period of thousands of years, the ice was beginning to melt slowly, and the global temperature was getting warmer. And then suddenly, really anomalously and puzzlingly, 12,800 years ago, global temperatures shoot down to the level they were at the absolute peak of the last ice age, and they stay there in this, what I call a short, sharp, deep freeze. Geologists have a name for this period. They call it the Younger Dryas, and it lasts for 1,200 years, from 12,800 to 11,600 years ago, and then temperatures shoot up again. Very radical warming takes place of an order that would make any talk of global warming today look quite minuscule. So we have this anomalous, puzzling period, freezing temperatures lasting for 1,200 years, brought on suddenly and ended suddenly. And that is the fingerprint, if you like, that is the signature of a global cataclysm, which radically affected world climate. And we now know that the agent behind that cataclysm was a comet, which broke up into multiple fragments and hit the Earth, as we've already discussed.
Graham, let me ask you a question. This was confusing to me, having no background in archaeology or in seismic events or geology. Tell me, if I want you to describe what happened to the Earth when this melted, because when you describe this wall of water, which we'll get to, folks, in a second, here's what I didn't understand. If, in fact, a comet came through the atmosphere and landed on Earth and everything blew, and tell us what happened physically to the Earth, why it cooled, then 1,200 years later, I think that I read from the group of scientists that have been coming forth, and it's and the reason why we're kind of together, folks, is because a very, very good friend of mine, Alan West, is one of these scientists that have written up these scientific papers, and they've discovered that 1,200 years later, then another group of asteroids, or an asteroid that broke up.
Not quite another group. What we're looking at is further fragments of the same comet.
Oh, really?
We're dealing with initially one very large object, which would, calculations suggest, that it would have been in excess of 100 kilometers in diameter, perhaps as much as 200 kilometers in diameter. This is what you call a giant comet. It enters the inner solar system about 20,000 years ago on an orbit that crosses the orbit of the Earth. And like all comets, everybody can remember what happened to Shoemaker-Levy 9 when it hit Jupiter in 1994. Comets break up into multiple fragments. That's what happened to this giant comet. Instead of one huge sort of cannonball, it broke up into multiple smaller missiles. But some of those smaller missiles were as much as a mile in diameter themselves. Very, very, very dangerous objects. And so the suggestion is that this comet fragmented, the fragments spread out along the path of its orbit. The Earth crosses that orbit. As a matter of fact, it crosses it twice a year, and it still continues to cross it to this day. The Earth crosses that orbit, and from time to time, it crosses a section of the comet's orbit where there are large objects is spinning around. And it was hit by some of those objects out of that debris stream of the comet 12,800 years ago, causing the beginning of the Younger Dryas. Further objects hit 11,600 years ago, but in a different location, in an ocean, not on ice caps. That caused the end of the Younger Dryas and the sudden warming. I can explain why.
Yeah, please.
There have been further impacts, since then. In the Bronze Age, the most recent impact that we can document was in 1908, the Tunguska event in Russia. All of these are fragments of the same original giant comet that Earth has had a troubling relationship with for 20,000 years.
Holy cow. Okay, let's stick to the subject. Let's go back to that 1200 date.
Yeah.
And the second group hit the ocean, you believe, right?
Well, the key question that you asked a few moments
how
ago
did it warm
is
up
what
the
caused
Earth?
The sudden freezing, and then 1200 years later, what
right.
causes the sudden warming?
Right.
And here's the evidence on this. The sudden freezing is caused by comet fragments hitting the North American ice cap 12,800 years ago. The effect of that is to liquidize millions of square miles of ice. Because the heat that these objects pack, you have to understand when a comet fragment hits the Earth, it's coming in at 70,000 kilometers an hour. Let's say 50,000 miles an hour.
Right.
And it's a mile wide. This is generating impact energy that would dwarf the entire nuclear arsenal of the Earth going off at once.
Wow.
It's a gigantic, massively hot explosion. It liquidizes that ice. All of that ice water comes off the ice cap and pours into the world ocean. Vast amounts of frozen, icy water pouring into the Atlantic Ocean interrupt the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream is the central heating system of our planet. It's linked to the global meridional overturning circulation. That whole system is smashed by this impact. That's why we get a sudden deep freeze. 1,200 years later, we get warming because there are further impacts, but this time the epicenter of the impact is not on ice. It's in ocean. It's in the Pacific Ocean. And a huge amount of water vapor is thrown up into the upper atmosphere, enshrouds the entire Earth, creating a greenhouse effect, which accounts for the warming that we see 11,600 years ago and the very rapid rise in sea level that occurs then. And interestingly enough, 11,600 years ago, 9,600 BC, is the date that Plato gives us for the submergence of the lost civilization of Atlantis.
Fascinating. So it's almost impossible for us to understand the scope of the floods that poured into American European continents, and not even just into the oceans. But you talk about the geology in Washington State,
yes,
and Idaho, and tell us about
right
that wall of water right across the nation.
That's right. I mean, you can envisage this 2 mile deep ice cap, which eventually comes to an end, roughly north of Minneapolis. Roughly north of Minneapolis, take a line across North America, east and west from Minneapolis, and that's roughly where that edge of that ice cap comes. And then you have these colossal explosions on the ice cap, and a great deal of the water, icy water, goes into the world ocean, but a great deal of it also flows south across the continental United States. And that's why we have features like the Channeled Scablands in the Pacific Northwest, where you can see that the landscape has been utterly tortured and destroyed by what has been described as the greatest flood ever to have occurred on planet Earth. You have features like Upper and Lower Grand Coulee. You have dry falls, a fossilized waterfall that's five times bigger than Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls has taken 12,000 years to form. Dry falls formed in 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
Because of the gigantic flood that was flowing through it. Now, there's been a lot of misinformation about the sources of the flooding that we see the evidence for in North America. For a long time, it was thought that we were looking at rather polite, gentle, multiple, small floods distributed over a period of thousands of years causing this damage. But we now know that's not the case. We now know that we're looking at one gigantic episode of flooding that occurred 12,800 years ago and that left incredible scars on the North American landscape. And we're just now beginning to realize what those scars actually mean.
You had mentioned in your book, I believe you said, if we were standing there in northern Washington and all of a sudden we heard this roar, there was a wall of water. How high?
Well, 800 feet high. In some areas it was higher, where it's channeled between narrow banks, you get evidence, you get strand lines 1,200 feet deep, you know.
Can you believe that?
And this stuff is not just water. This is a slurry. This is mud. This is whole forests ripped up by their roots. This is icebergs come down off the ice cap, icebergs the size of oil tankers jostling against one another, many of which have enchained rocks that the glaciers have picked up on their journeys, and those rocks get dumped all over Washington State, gigantic boulders that don't belong there, all evidence of this incredible flooding. And what I've tried to do in Magicians of the Gods is show that the old model, the so-called Missoula floods model for this, multiple floods out of Lake Missoula, actually just doesn't work anymore. We need to revisit that whole area of inquiry in the light of the new evidence of comet impacts on the North American ice cap.
It is impossible for us to imagine that. Can I ask you a question? You mentioned the flood in the book, but we're going to get over, and I'm going to slop over now into the religious side, and
sure,
in our own background in the Bible records of this flood. But
yeah,
it must have then, if we're going to get Noah's Ark, and we'll get into that in detail, but if we're going
to
get that...
It's perfectly legitimate to bring Noah's Ark into it because it's part of the global legacy of flood traditions.
Of course it is, Graham, but we only have 2 minutes left. How about that? Do you see why we need another session, part two?
Sure.
Let me just ask you a question to set this up, though. Did that flood then reach down into the Middle East also?
Oh, it was a global flood.
Ah.
It was a global flood. It wasn't limited. All the world's oceans are connected. You're looking at a process that takes ice that has been sitting on top of continental land masses for 100,000 years and turns it overnight into huge amounts of water. That water enters the world's ocean, and the world's ocean rises very rapidly.
And when you say rapidly, how rapid would that be? Would they have time to build an ark? It takes 3 months to build an ark, etc.?
Now we're coming to another question, which is the level of civilization that existed before the cataclysm. If you go with mainstream archaeologists, as I said at the beginning, will tell you that there were only hunter-gatherers then,
mm-hmm,
and hunter-gatherers supposedly could not have had the science to anticipate a disaster of this sort. However, my view is that we've lost the traces of an advanced civilization in our prehistory, the very advanced civilization that was destroyed in this cataclysm. And such an advanced civilization would have had the ability to foresee the disaster scientifically and to take some precautions to ensure that at least some survived. And that's why my book's called Magicians of the Gods, because I believe there were survivors. They were often referred to as the magicians of the gods in mythology all around the world. And they traveled all around the world seeking to restart, to begin again what was lost. They didn't quite succeed, but the traces of that effort are very, very clear in myths and in monuments all around the world.
And we're going to get into that, Graham, in part two. Ladies and gentlemen, this is fascinating stuff. I hope you agree with me. We're going to air part two. Graham and I are going to stay on, and we're going to tape another session. We've run out of time today. But make sure you fill out, when you get to our website, which you're listening to now, or click to our website, fill out your name and email on the pop-up screen on the website, because that way we send you out quick notices every time we post another fascinating interview, and I don't want you to forget this one, part two, which will be coming up next week. I want to mention one more thing. If you want to hear more of Graham, which he's a fascinating author, I think you understand that now, please tune in to hear him being interviewed on the Joe Rogan Show on November 15th. And we will remind you that if you fill out the pop-up, I'll remind you when that's coming up. Mark your calendars. I want to mention that the Comet Group that Graham mentioned so many times in his book is launching a crowdfunding appeal, too. And that'll be coming up in this coming week, I believe, after we launch this show. It's for the scientists that you read about in Graham's book. They want to continue the research into the exciting field of discovery. So check out the details on our website. Sign up for our mail list, and you'll be in tune with us every single week as we flow through the year. Graham, thank you for taking your time today. You're an amazing author, as 7 million of your fans will attest.
Thanks, Ron. It's been great to talk to you. Look forward to the next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Ron Way. Thank you for joining us here on Author Talk. Until next week, part two with Graham Hancock, I remain faithfully yours.